Mint is still $15 a month for premium wireless. And if you haven't made the switch yet, here are 15 reasons why you should. One, it's $15 a month. Two, seriously, it's $15 a month. Three, no big contracts. Four, I use it. Five, my mom uses it. Are you playing me off? That's what's happening, right? Okay, give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan. $15 per month equivalent required. New customer offer first 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
I'm John Batchelor, continuing my conversation with Professor Eleanor Barraclough, who is an historian, a BBC broadcaster, as well as working at the Bath Spa University. The book is Embers of the Hands. It talks about the Viking Age, roughly 750 AD to 1100 AD. But both sides, there's no certainty here because the magic of the Viking Age collides with the magic of the Christian conversion process. We're now going to the geography. And the geography includes a big battle, and a graveyard. That is a way of talking about the endings. We begin with the big battle in 1066. Harold of England, Harold of Norway, and William of Normandy. We need to establish, Eleanor, that Normandy is as Norse as anything in England, correct? And Rollo,
yeah,
was
absolutely.
Rollo was the founder of Normandy. So we're talking about the Vikings at war with the Vikings. The tradition.
Yes, pretty much. Yeah, so Norman literally means Northmen. What's interesting is it's a bit like when we were talking about further east. What often happens when the Norse settle in an area is that they assimilate culturally really quickly. And so by the time of William the Conqueror, as he, you know, is shortly to become in our narrative, they're not Norse in that way. They don't speak the language. But having said that, if you look at the Bayeux Tapestry and how the Normans are depicted there, their hairstyles are the hairstyles that we associate with the Scandinavian settlers. So it's sort of like short at the back, long and shaggy at the front. If you look at the Bayeux Tapestry, that's exactly what you see there for the Normans.
1066 is a convenient place to say this is when the Viking Age ends and we transform into the modern age, the last 1,000 years. There are problems with that, however. Who was Harald Hardrada?
So Harald Hardrada is, I think you might say, something of a footnote in sort of the history of Britain, in that we know him from 1066 when he's killed by Harold Godwinson, who at that point is King of England, at the Battle of Stamford Bridge, which is just outside York. But Harald Hardrada is King of Norway, and he's had the most extraordinary, rich and dramatic life up to this point. He spent much of his youth in the Byzantine capital, Constantinople, where he was one of the emperor's personal bodyguards, possibly even the leader of the bodyguards, if we're to believe him. And in fact, that kenning, Embers of the Hands, which I take the title of the book from, comes from a verse that is connected to Harald himself. So he does the emperor a great service and he's rewarded with embers of the hands, which in his case means he's rewarded with gold and silver and treasure. But Harald Hardrada, or Hardraudi, as he is known in Old Norse, it means hard ruler. He comes back to Norway and he becomes a very sort of successful king. What he wants to do, though, is retake the English throne for Norway. And this is because he comes from a context in which King Knut, going back to sort of 1018, 1016, is creating this North Sea Empire, which is England, Denmark, and parts of Norway. And so this is essentially, in essence, Harald's claim to the English throne as he sees it. But of course, there are two other contenders famously for that throne, Harald Godwinson, who is on the throne at that point, and William of Normandy, who we know eventually is the one to triumph at Hastings. So Harald Godwinson, or at least his army, they kill Harald Hardrada at the Battle of Stamford Bridge. And this is all very richly described in great detail in Harald's saga, because he has his own saga written down in Iceland a couple of centuries later. The Icelanders are very fond of Harald Hardrada because he helps them out during a famine. And so this date, 1066, has often been used as this is the end of the Viking Age, because Harald Hardrada is this larger-than-life figure that in many ways represents much of what the Viking Age was about. But there's also a problem here, which is that, a little like Lindisfarne back in 793, taking 1066 is an incredibly Anglo-centric way of looking at the end of any historical period, but particularly for a diaspora that spread all the way from Greenland to Ukraine, Russia, as they are now. And so even if we go north across what's now the border into Scotland, already that date is fairly meaningless. And what's going on there continues to go on for centuries. So I'm not saying we should throw the date out completely. It's an important date in many ways, but it comes back to this problem of, well, how do we define historical eras? And if we define them just in relation to the great rulers and when they're killed, then we lose a lot of the subtlety of history.
Everything's happening around 1000, though. It's a strange synchronicity, the conversion process, the battle of Hastings, even the you provide the background to the Battle of Hastings, which starts with Harald Bluetooth and leads to his son Canute. That's happening in Norway? Is that where that's happening?
So Harald Bluetooth is in Denmark, and he's a really important figure. But we have to, he's back sort of quite a few decades from 1066. But why he's important is he leaves this big sort of public runestone where he says, you know, I am brilliant and I converted the Danes to Norway and I, you know, ruled Denmark and you know, I converted the Danes to Christianity and I ruled part of Norway and I was very important. Harald Bluetooth, actually, Harald Bluetooth is always one of my favourites because his name, HB, his initials, the runes for that, we all have on our modern smartphones because that's Bluetooth. That's where that comes from. It's this idea of connections and bringing people together. But yeah, I mean, these decades are significant and important, and we see how interconnected these histories are. So, you know, after Harald Bluetooth, we have Sven Forkbeard, who does conquer England initially. He then dies very soon afterwards. I think he only lasts 5 weeks on the English throne. And eventually, after some more toing and throwing, his son Canute ends up on the English throne until his death in 1035. And so that's the context for what happens sort of three decades later by the time we get to 1066.
Now the second ending. This is 200 years later. It's a first time I've confronted it. The Battle of Largs. This is the King of Scotland, the King Alexander III of Scotland and King Hakon IV of Norway. Battle on the beach. And what's at hand?
Yeah, so this is a very interesting one. I grew up knowing quite a lot about the Battle of Largs simply because my dad was born on the Isle of Bute, which is just down the coast, sort of an over the water from Largs. And but the Battle of Largs, I think, is sort of one of the really interesting unsung events of sort of the twilight of the Viking Age, you know, maybe we'll say. So at this point, there are huge numbers of Norse settlers, but by this time we wouldn't even call them settlers. It's just Norse people living in the Western Isles. So, you know, the Hebrides coming down, the Clyde Islands, all the way to the Isle of Man. So it's a very Norse culturally inflected part of the British Isles. And King Haakon in Norway is the top dog there at this point. And so he wants to keep hold of them. But the problem is that King Alexander, as you say, of Scotland also wants to have them. And so the Battle of Largs, well, essentially it's a series of skirmishes. It's fought at the start of October on the Scottish mainland. And the reason it's so interesting is that when we think about, okay, well, what defines the Viking Age? So much of what defines the Viking Age is going on in the context of the Battle of Largs. You know, so there's raiding, there's really nasty raiding that goes on from the Norse side in particular. It's the fact that they want to kind of keep control or gain control. There's a lot of cultural tension at this point from the sort of like that highest political level. Now, what happens, though, is fairly inconclusive. We're not talking about something like the Battle of Stamford Bridge, where Harold Hardrada is killed a couple of centuries earlier. The winter comes, the storms are really bad. So King Halcon of Norway heads up to Orkney, sort of off the northern coast of Scotland, which is still very much Norse controlled. And there he dies. He's not, you know, he's not expecting to die. He's expecting to start the campaign again come the spring. But he dies. And so these Western Isles pass to Scotland. And so we see this real shift at that point for the death of one way of life in a way, the start of the other. But of course, all those people of Norse Scandinavian heritage who've always lived in those islands, or certainly for the last few hundred years, are still there. So again, it's not this sort of definite dividing line between one era and another. It's never that simple, really. Well, very rarely that simple when you look on the ground at ordinary people's lives.
One more ending when we come back. The book is Embers of the Hands. That's gold. That's what gold is. Hidden Histories of the Viking Age. Eleanor Barraclough is the author.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Hey guys, finding the perfect gift for the food lover in your life is easy. Thanks to Goldbelly. Goldbelly ships America's most iconic foods straight from world-famous restaurants right to your door. So if you want to treat someone to Joe's Stone Crab from Miami, Franklin Barbecue from Texas, or desserts from famous foodies like Ina Garten or Martha Stewart, Goldbelly has you covered with free shipping anywhere in the country. Just go to goldbelly.com and for a limited time, get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's promo code GIFT.
Hey guys, have you heard of Goldbelly? It's this amazing site where they ship the most iconic, famous foods from restaurants across the country, anywhere, nationwide. I've never found a more perfect gift than food. Goldbelly ships Chicago deep dish pizza, New York bagels, Maine lobster rolls, and even Ina Garten's famous cakes. So, if you're looking for a gift for the food lover in your life, head to goldbelly.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's goldbelly.com, promo code GIFT.